Welcome to the Sailor Noob podcast, where a superfan and a noob talk about the original Sailor Moon episode by episode. I'm your host, Mikan Hana, joined by my co-host.
I'm the co-host, Caliban, and hold on to your butts, it's gonna get weird.
Yes, and we're a couple of magical people ready to moon crystal power make up this episode. Sailor Noob is brought to you by Wibbly Wobbly Timey Wimey. It's time to travel back to the future, at least for Chibiusa.
Doctor Who versus Sailor Pluto, who wins?
I don't know. I kind of want to say Sailor Pluto just because that's the fandom that we're in. But like,
it depends on which doctor, I suppose, as well. You've got 14 ones to choose from.
Right.
Or 13.
Well, and I think a lot of them would just try to talk themselves out of it.
Well, see, the reason I bring that up is because it's about philosophy, right? Every doctor up to, and maybe including the 9th and half of the 10th, which is 5? Doesn't make any sense.
I don't know.
Although 10 is modeled on 5. Non-Who fans are not going to care about any of this. So I'll try to make it fast. Has always been about destroying systems. Has always been about pulling authority figures down and, you know, beneficial anarchy. Mm-hmm. That's the whole reason the character exists in the first place, because they come from the most controlled place in the universe, Gallifrey.
True.
So an early doctor may see Sailor Pluto as a total enemy.
Yes.
Somebody who fastidiously guards time and the gateway to time and the travel through time. A later doctor might just be, how can I help you stop anybody from traveling through time?
Yeah.
Because we're going to date, or you are have decided to make bad decisions, or also, you know, Jeff Bezos going to space is the best thing.
That weird,
pro-Amazon episode that was in, like, the 13th Doctor's first
season. That's true. There were a lot of weird decisions in that season.
So anyway, I think I found an interesting corundum. Corundum is a mineral. Conundrum, which is that what we want from the Doctor has changed a lot over time.
Yeah. Today we are talking about episode number 82, Muraihe no Tabidachi. Jiku Kairo no Tatakai in Japanese, Journey to the Future, Battle in the Space-Time Corridor, the English translation, and the English title, Future Shocked.
The Space-Time Corridor, literally from Doctor Who.
Is that right?
That's the tube that it goes through. Well, that's the vortex, but it's a corridor through space and time.
Okay. All right. I did not know that. So that's good to know.
You call yourself a Doctor Who fan. Yeah. What kind of Doctor Who podcast is this?
One that takes place mostly in present day, so not a whole lot of time travel.
In the Super Japan.
Yeah.
The Doctor doesn't go to Japan very often.
No, I don't think they have.
Yeah, I mean, look at the talents of Wen Chang. You don't want to do that. So let's talk about something different instead. Let's talk about our Patreon and our new patron on our Patreon at patreon.com/SailorNoob.
Very good. You can breathe out now.
Long-time listeners to the show will know how tough that was.
Yes.
Their name is Lorian.
Welcome, Lorian. It's great to have you here.
I'm guessing Lord of the Rings fan.
Probably.
If not, I'm guessing Lord of the Rings fan has been asked hundreds of times to this person in their life, but it's a beautiful name though, Lorian, but generally associated with Lord of the Rings.
Yes.
We do Doctor Who on this show. Haven't done a lot of Lord of the Rings.
No. I have not read the books, unfortunately.
Who wins, Gandalf or
Sailor Pluto? They both have staffs. Yeah. I don't know.
I'm trying to think of an equivalent. Queen Serenity? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
Queen Beryl or Sauron?
Oof. I don't... That's another really good one. That's, like, really hard. I think I'd probably have to pick Sauron, but Beryl's pretty powerful, too.
Sauron controls one land that is the most controllable land in the world because it's a U-shaped mountain range.
Yeah.
Queen Beryl mounted an attack on the moon from Earth.
That's true.
And used magic. Well, I mean, I guess Battalia's, you know, magic is involved.
Yes.
But like, used Battalia's magic to spirit thousands of warriors from the Earth to the moon. Oh, I hope I'm not ruining Sailor Moon for anyone.
hope you're not listening to this.
That's a weird situation to find yourself in.
It is. Oh. Yeah.
So, like, she's an intergalactic threat.
Yeah, that's true.
And, like...
That is true.
In the Tolkien legendarium, I'm sure somebody can pull something out of the Tale of Turin or some book of Lost Tales, but we don't really worry about other planets or whatever. You know, Middle Earth is kind of the only planet or really material world that
that's
we're
true.
Worried about, the world of yes. Ardra. So... Anyway, welcome to the Patreon.
Yes, welcome. We're happy to have you.
You probably know that we sometimes take sidetracks, but we'll try not to do that too much on this show. But that's one of the things that the Patreon is for. It's for our outtakes from the show and longer discussions about things.
Yes, absolutely.
There is many a time and off if we've talked about something that has just never even made it to air because... It's probably about Doctor Who.
Yeah, it's probably about something that maybe fans of Sailor Moon, I don't know. I mean, the Venn diagram, I'm sure there is some overlap because we're here, but I don't know how much overlap.
Yeah, I think that the next, or not the, I don't know what number wave it is, but like a certain wave of fandom growing into a thing was realizing, oh, it's everybody's you know, multiple things.
Yes.
We're all taking things from the menu.
Right.
And, you know, this person doesn't do this, but this person does this, this, and this. And see, if you see a guy that likes Transformers, bad pick. I think there's a lot of people out there okay. who only like Transformers. But let's say you see a guy that says Transformers. That doesn't mean that he doesn't like Lord of the Rings or Star Wars.
That's absolutely correct.
You can absolutely have somebody that likes Star Wars and Star Trek at the same time. It doesn't make any sense, but you can totally do it.
I like both.
And so I don't know exactly when it was, but I know at least for me, there was a period where I realized, oh, that's totally possible.
Yeah. Yeah. I can like lots of different things and liking being part of one fandom doesn't cancel out.
But if
another.
You have a room that you open it up and it's all Sailor Moon stuff, it's just pink. It's just Lame and Charm as far as the eye can see.
Right.
Like some of these people on Instagram.
Yes.
I think they'd get in trouble if they were like, you know, Frodo's so cute. Be like, boo!
I think they just put that on like another channel Frodo. Or something. Yeah, yeah right, exactly. Alt. Yeah, right, exactly.
Where they're like, oh, it's I'm Lord of the Rings wolf.
Yeah, right. Welcome to my channel. Here's this completely separate room full of Lord of the Rings memorabilia. No, I don't know.
The wolf that fought Beren for the Silmaril. All right. I'm just showing
Whoa.
Off.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Let's just get back to the show.
Okay. Would you like to give us a synopsis of this episode?
I will try. This episode opens with a very spare preview, which is perhaps for good reason. It's basically just the girls running.
Yeah.
We see them running to an unknown destination, all five sailor soldiers, and we can hear the voice of Chibi Usa echoing, saying, please save my mom! And the sailor senshi are apparently running towards a city on the horizon. Above the city, we see a falling star, or what looks like a falling star.
Mm-hmm.
We see a flash to the eyes of Prince Demando and back to the city as a giant explosion engulfs it.
Yes.
So it was a falling space nuke or something like that.
Right.
The very ground beneath the city begins to crumble as the Sailor Scouts are caught up in the blast and thrown into the air screaming. Chibi is there, but she can only watch as her friends float lifelessly in the air. She screams and sits up suddenly in her bed. Just another dream.
Yep.
This kid's got problems.
She's got a lot of nightmares.
She's got to talk to somebody.
Yeah.
And she grasps the time key tightly around her neck. That's the opening. The next day, Chibi and Luna P are in the park, and Chibi is staring into a fountain and thinking, I thought if I could get back to the future, I could save my mom and the others. But even Sailor Moon and her friends can lose. It's just a dream, kid. Jeez. So you watch the show? Mamoru arrives and asks Chibi if she's returning to the future now. She seems unsure, but he says, nothing will be resolved if you run away. Be confident. I'll protect you. This seems to cheer her up.
Yeah.
And it's more effective that he's saying it and not a puppet on his hand.
I would agree with that 100%.
That way.
Yes.
At the lake, the five sailor soldiers, the five sailor soldiers, Goku, Naruto, Fujiko, Shoujo Gakume Utena, and Lum. When they're together, they're a fist. Sorry. The five sailor soldiers are gathered. They're waiting for Chibi, and they're just about to go looking for her when Tuxedo Mask swoops in. Because he can fly sometimes, but I don't know, whatever.
Yeah.
With Chibi, he flew when he fought Jadeite, didn't he? They were sparring with sticks and he was kind of flying in the sky.
Yeah, I mean, he seems to fly down from high places. I don't really know.
Yeah.
We don't really think about it. We're like, oh, that looks cool.
He forgets he can fly.
There he goes.
Like I can fly, but you know, I'm always forget. But I got a pretty cool motorcycle, so. Anyway, he comes in, he's got Chibi with him, and Sailor Moon is like, you're so late! But Chibi says, I've got stuff to take care of, too. I had to check my P.O. box.
I mean.
What is she going to do?
Yeah. I don't know, but I mean.
The boy's down at the poker. I owed the money at the poker hall. I owed the money.
Well, I mean, okay, so.
Couldn't skip out on that.
Apparently, it is really more prevalent for really young kids, like 6 and up in Japan, to just kind of go.
Oh, no. I know.
Yeah.
The fact that they say, like, where is she? Like, to Usagi. And they're like, didn't you leave the house
at the same time
yeah. she did?
Yeah.
And she's just like, I got a few errands to run. I'm going to stop by Sephora. And later on, maybe, you know, a Jamba Juice. I don't know. We'll see. Like, what? That's a lot of independence.
It is.
No wonder she has nightmares all the time. Artemis and Luna are there, and Luna says, Chibi, if you please. Chibi raises the key, and she calls on the Guardian of Time. She says, I call out your true name, O Almighty God of Time, Father of the Guardian, Kronos.
Mm-hmm.
The path of light to me. And a beam of light stabs down from the clouds and envelops the group. They all disappear.
Yes.
I don't know who this Kronos is. Sailor Moon, alone, reappears in a hazy cloudscape, and a slight wind blows as she looks around for the others anxiously. Before her in the distance appears a dark shape. She begins to walk towards it, but before she can arrive, a voice calls out, Stop! Any who attempt to break the taboo and approach the door to space-time will be eliminated. And a dark figure appears and holds its staff aloft to bring down upon Usagi. Prepare to die, the figure screams. But Chibi comes running out and grabs the figure who we now see is Sailor Pluto.
Mm-hmm.
Pluto says, Small lady, Sailor Moon, what are you doing here? Why didn't I? Well, sorry, sometimes my murderous rages get the best of me.
I know, it's like.
Damn this smoke that I live in.
I know.
For eternity. Chibi says, I'm sorry I broke my promise and brought these people with me, but they can save my mom. Are you mad? And Pluto puts her hand on Chibi's head and says, So you finally mastered the key of space-time, and you have grown into a fine lady.
Yeah.
Really? Maybe future standards are different. What's parenting like in the future?
That is a fantastic question.
We told you to do that so you would do the opposite. Congratulations, you broke the rules. You're learning what it is to be an adult.
Good
No,
point.
Like, I'm
sorry I broke the rules.
90 miles an hour down the wrong lane. She says, please forgive me for turning my weapon on you, but you certainly are always a source of trouble for me. She's talking about Sailor Moon?
I think she is.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
She says, let's open the doorway of space-time. Okay, let's! And she turns to the giant door behind her. Her staff crackles with light, and as she holds it aloft, light shoots from the tip to the large lock on the door, opening it. Beyond, the door is full of blue light. And Pooh says, now travel to the future. You must never let go of Small Lady's hand. If you are separated, you may become imprisoned in the crevices of time for all eternity. That sounds bad.
Sounds real
stay
bad.
Stay out of those crevices.
Yeah.
Time crevices. Ami says, Sailor Pluto, you should come with us. But Pluto says, she cannot leave, but please protect Small Lady. Everyone leaps into the door, and as the ticking of a clock can be heard, Luna says, I've heard about her. She guards the doorway of space-time for all eternity. Her existence is a secret, and no one's ever seen her. Okay, Luna. Okay, sure. Two things. First, you're telling us about her right now after we saw her.
Yeah.
And number two, you seem to have a lot of knowledge you give us after we basically discover it for ourselves.
That is also true.
So it's like, huh, Sailor V, huh? That voice sounds familiar. And then a cat jumps out. I'm Artemis. She's like, it's Artemis from the moon. Yeah. Yeah. Just a little bit late. Maybe we could can you give us a top 5 crazy facts we don't know yet list?
Yeah,
and
right.
Maybe we can just sit her down, have her ramble into a tape recorder on a Sunday afternoon, everything she knows about magic and the Moon Kingdom. You know, maybe get something useful out of it, something we learn about before we have to face a deadly enemy or travel in time.
I know.
The Luna Tapes, we'll call it.
I like it. I like it a lot.
Queen Serenity was online too, and she wasn't crooning or whatever, you know. The groups emerge from the blue light into the corridor of space-time, which looks like if Salvador Dali designed for Lisa Frank.
Yes, or pretty much.
This is probably a ripoff, but you know what it looks like? It looks like the subspace highway from Scott Pilgrim, which I'm sure Brian Lee O'Malley will say is an homage, but he ripped off from this, it looks like. It's all tiles and sketchy columns, and the sky is black, but it's like shot through with neon colors.
Yes.
And if you saw a unicorn farting across the sky, you would not blink an eye.
No, you would not.
And as they land, they're all buffeted by a wind, which is not explained.
Yes. No.
And it's almost like there's a wind of time or like a pressure differential. I'm not sure why. I feel like going back in time, you would feel a wind, but they're going forward in time.
Right. Like
maybe it's easier to go back in time. I don't know. But they're walking against this wind. If you've ever been the first off an airplane.
Yes.
Or, that reminds me of, if you've ever left a stadium with a pressurized dome roof.
Yes.
At the end of the game, where you get blown out.
Yep.
It seems like that. So maybe the quarter of time is the Metrodome. I don't know.
Maybe it is.
But they begin to walk down the corridor of space-time. Meanwhile, in the city of Green Goo, Saphir gets a chime on his Alexa that tells him that somebody is using the space-time corridor.
I know.
Here's what he says. Oh, it's ready. Here's what he says exactly. Someone has used the ancient corridor to time warp instead of using the space-time route that leads to our nemesis. Okay, so what you're saying is, what are you saying?
I think
how is a time warp different than the time route?
I think
Who is your nemesis? The rabbit?
I think
is this just a long and complicated way to say that somebody's traveling to the future instead of back to the past?
What I think he's saying is that somebody is using the corridor instead of traveling their route that they have specifically to their nemesis, so specifically to wherever it is that their hideout is.
You just said what he said.
Oh, okay.
And for all of the slow burn storytelling that I've credited this show with in the past, now I'm going to take it to task because you have an episode that's kind of an info dump, but really we're literally going to the future. Like, it's over now. We know they're from the future. We're headed there right now. We just met the Guardian of Time, who is presumably the daughter of the God of Time or whatever. Mm-hmm. We just learned all that. And you're like, ooh, they're going down the thing for the other guy and then the nemesis and maybe the stuff. And it's like, I don't know if you're just using like pronouns and like general terms because it's natural to you, or if the writers are still trying to obscure stuff at this point. You have jerked me around so much, I don't know if I'm still being jerked or not.
I see.
And you can quote me on that. That goes on a shirt. So anyway, there's a space-time route, but there's also a time warp, and it's a jump to the left, and also there's a nemesis. So we don't really know. But anyway, Esmeralda appears and says, it's the rabbit, right? But Saphir says, she's not alone. Demando says, oh, it's rare to see a visitor to that planet. What planet? Earth?
Okay, now I'm confused too, right.
I know these guys are from Planet X. So a visitor to your planet? Planet X?
A visitor from Earth? I don't know.
It's like this is it a translation thing? We've been warned against certain translations, but it's taking this technobabble and these timey, things and trying to. Japanese Star Trek must be a nightmare, is all I'm saying. Like them trying to translate all the stuff people say on Star Trek to Japanese, it probably just gets simplified. It's just like, engines don't go. Make engines go. I mean, they're not cavemen, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
All right,
yeah.
So anyway, a lot of confusing stuff. A creepy wise guy arrives through the floor, and he says, the time has come to obtain the crystal and the rabbit and destroy that invincible castle. I understand everything he said
there. Yes.
But Esme's like, obtain the rabbit? Oh, wow, now the characters are confused.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, we're not killing her now. Didn't you get the memo? Wise guy says, if we add the rabbit's power to the power of the evil dark crystal, a wonderful power would be released. Wonderful as a general term. Is wonderful the same as evil as a descriptor?
Yes,
as
I
an
think
adjective?
So.
They're just saying, why don't you say a large power or the ultimate power?
Okay,
so
good
specific.
Point. Good point.
They're watching our heroes progress on Wise Guy's crystal ball. They got CCTV.
Yes.
And Demando gets a look at Usagi for the first time, and he thinks, those eyes. So she is Sailor Moon. Mm-hmm. How beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to do this now? I guess we're setting up the next arc.
Yeah.
He's never looked at, like, a dossier or any of this.
I don't.
Now he's going to fall in love with Sailor Moon?
I don't
It'll be reflected in the rating.
I don't know if... Okay. Anyway, all right. I don't know if he's seen Sailor Moon before.
Get the rabbit and disappears. And Demando, who I did not think was taking orders from anybody, says to Esme, get the rabbit, bring me Sailor Moon 2. I want to gaze into those beautiful eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone hated that.
Yeah.
Demando disappears and Saphir says, damn that shady fortune-telling man.
Yep.
He appeared out of nowhere and emasculated my brother with his cunning talk. Personally, I talk expositorially. Esme says, you know what I mean? Why are we getting all this now? We spent 15 episodes with these idiots.
I don't know.
Esme says, you know, he was the one who gave Demando the idea to get the crystal, too. I also do it.
Yeah.
Saphir thinks, someday I'll expose his true intentions. I'm out of exposition. And Esme thinks, if Sailor Moon is bewitching Demando's heart, he's gotta go.
Yeah.
Back in the corridor, the Sailor Scouts are advancing. They're fighting against the current, the flow of time itself. And Sailor Moon looks worried. Chibi looks at her and thinks, if she can't handle this, can she really save my mom? And as she thinks this, we see their hands and their grip seem to loosen.
Yes.
Their hands are slipping apart. But Chibi thinks, well, she's all I have to rely on her.
Uh-huh.
As the Senshi advance, Esmeralda appears, upside down.
I love it.
And laughing, because it's fun.
Yeah.
She says, welcome to our territory. And from her fan, she unleashes a blast of green fire that blows the Senshi off the ground, and they're tossed to the winds of time. The end. So I didn't really think that the series would end like that. But, you know, they know what they're doing, I guess.
They do. They really do.
Esme says to herself, damn, I've lost them in the maze of space-time. And she summons Ryu Akusu. Esme says, you will have an easier time moving in the maze of space-time. Find them and dispose of them. But bring me the rabbit from the maze of space-time. That's where I want you to go. And Ryu Akusu disappears. As she leaves, Esme says, I forgot to tell her about Sailor Moon. What a shame if she unknowingly kills her. No way I'll get in trouble for that.
I'm so bad.
Elsewhere in the maze of space-time, our five Senshi are gathering their faculties. Tuxedo Mask and Chibi are nowhere to be seen. And screw the cats, I guess. Mercury says they must be in one of the crevices that Pluto mentioned.
Uh-huh.
Moving on.
Yeah.
It looks bad.
Yeah, it does.
But they decide they have to find Chibi and Tuxedo Mask. Suddenly, the silver crystal in Moon's brooch begins to chime and glow, pointing out a light on the twisted horizon. The girls think that the future crystal must be resonating with Usagi's crystal. Sure, why not? Like, any of this has been explained.
And
they decide to head for the light. Meanwhile, in another crevice, which is a kind of staticky TV background, our Tuxedo Mask and the cats.
Yes.
They prepare to begin searching. This kind of makes sense because they were riding him, I guess. And he guessed he wasn't hanging on anybody's hand, so he just got blown away. They prepare to begin searching for the others, but a voice tells them to come this way and hurry. Since the alternative is to float forever in oblivion, they go that way.
Yes.
Plus, Tuxedo Mask thinks he's heard the voice before.
Mm-hmm.
In another location entirely is Chibiusa and Luna P. Everything is red and ominous trees, which are branching like blood vessels. Mm-hmm. Chibi bemoans that she's all alone again, but through the red miasma, Chibi recognizes the door that leads to the future. Mm-hmm. She wants to return, but she doesn't want to go alone. She hears a voice that says, poor child, it's okay now, and sees what looks like her mother standing before her.
Yep.
She runs toward the vision of her mother, but stops short. With, like, no indication. Like, the music is swelling, and she's like, Mom! But then, record scratch, you're not my mom!
Yeah.
Okay, show.
I know.
The woman says, I am your mom, little rabbit. But Chibi says, my mom would never call me the rabbit. Which seems like maybe that would go before she stops then.
I would agree with you. And I actually, that's how I remembered it in my head, and I had to rewatch it to remember that's not how it was.
That's not what happens.
No.
At this, the woman begins to grotesquely transform, saying, oh, you're so clever. And she turns into Ryu Akusu.
Yes.
And says, but sometimes ignorance can be bliss in this world. Her fingernails grow to long claws, and she says, quote, you're going to experience some pain now.
I know.
Chibi is resigned to her fate, but she remembers Mamoru's words that she won't resolve anything if she keeps running away.
Mm-hmm.
She says, I'm not going to run. And she calls Luna P, who smashes into Ryukusu's face. Mm-hmm. And she calls for Luna P to transform into a slingshot.
I know.
One of those like big ones with the arm brace and everything that you shoot the metal balls from the naughty boys use them, right? Right. That's as close as I'm going to get to her turning into a machine gun or something. So I'll take it. And she shoots at Ryukusu, but it has no effect. Ryukusu says, mischievous girls need to be punished. And her hair, like, explodes out from her head and surrounds Chibi menacingly. Uh-huh. That's when the Sailor Senshi arrive, and they say, hold it! Ryukusu says she's surprised that they made it out of the maze of space-time. But Usagi says, we've got a powerful ally on our side. Lady Luck. What?
It's just a thing. They got lucky.
No, you don't. You don't. You literally have a tool that connects you to the future.
Fair.
Or to the rabbit. Maybe that's the light that they were going to. Like the three wise men.
Yeah.
We don't know. But it's not Lady Luck at all. Is it because you're a rabbit? You're lucky?
I don't know.
Well, if you don't know. Anyway.
Maybe it's because.
She says, in the name of the moon, I'll punish you. And Ryukusu says, okay, take this. And she blasts like something, some kind of cloud or something out. It hits the Senshi and they're like, ah!
Yes.
Ryukusu says, I drastically changed the flow of time. Oh, God, I'm glad you told us that.
At least she explained.
That's why their fingernails are long all of a sudden.
Yeah, right.
And Rei says, yeah, cool. Burning mandala! But Ryukusu reverses time and Rei's projectiles come flying back at her. Mercury gets her Robocop computer out. She says, she's reversing the flow of time. Yeah, we know. She said that. Jupiter and Venus take their shots, attacking with an SWP and a VLMC. We don't have a lot of time. We gotta cut these down.
Okay.
But both come right back at them. Mercury is scanning the enemy with her visor, and she says, right after she uses her power, the time distortion disappears. Just shaking my head at this point. Senshi decide that they need to use all of their power in a Sailor Planet attack.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Yeah.
But they'll need to get her to fire on them first.
Yes.
So Chibi volunteers and she immediately charges Ryukusu.
Mm-hmm.
Who says, you little dummy. Well, they say dumber kids are more adorable. I think I'm in love. She's so great.
She's awesome.
She swipes with her claws, but Chibi dodges away at like a video game at the last second. And then she's like, no. Wait, is that what it is? A claw attack? I thought that she was supposed to use her time powers. We had to time this perfectly. So everyone takes 30 seconds yelling star power.
Right.
One more thing. The moon on Chibi's head begins to glow. And then she takes aim with her slingshot and she shoots a ball of light right into Ryukusu's forehead.
Mm-hmm.
This pisses her off. And now she uses her time powers. There's no way any of this could have been coordinated, but it just works out. Just before, like,
Lady
the effect,
Luck.
Whatever this thing is. Yeah, right. Whatever, before the cloud of her powers reaches Chibi, Tuxedo Mask jumps in to carry her to safety.
Yes.
Because he was led by a voice that he thinks he recognizes.
Yep. You don't know who that could be?
Who was the voice?
Who is a voice that he has heard? There was a voice he heard earlier in the season.
In his dream, who told him to leave the thing alone?
Yes.
Right, but I don't know whose voice that was.
No.
Is that same voice?
Yes.
You dropped that like 12 episodes ago.
Yep.
This is not, okay, all right. It'll be affected. Sailor Planet Attack combines the power of the five Senshi and Ryukusu is destroyed. Everyone meets back up, and she is a droid this time. It's not like the Yoga Class guys.
Yes, she is.
Unfortunately. Everybody meets back up and they resolve to go through the door to the future and the door opens. They see the blasted ruins of Crystal Tokyo to their horror and dismay. It's a real downer.
Yeah. It is.
I don't remember if I said who I thought that voice sounded like, because that was so long ago.
I
think
asked
maybe
you
asked me, and I said I thought it sounded like his voice.
I don't think that's what you said,
okay.
But is that your answer now?
Oh, you're going to hide it from me? If you remember what I said, why not just tell me what I said? Sailor torture! That's what this show is.
I don't think that you said that before. Is that your answer now?
No, because I watched this days ago. I don't remember what it sounds like.
Okay, all right.
All I know is that's not much to go on.
I understand that.
Plus, this is a show for children.
It
I'm used to being ahead of this show because it's a show for children.
I agree.
You can't just go, oh, remember me? Hey, I'm from episode 62. It's like, doesn't.
That was 10 episodes ago.
It was 20 episodes
yeah,
ago.
Yeah, right.
That doesn't work.
All right. No. Yeah.
Now I want to stop the recording and go listen to it and then have an answer for you. But I don't. And I'm proud that I don't, because who possibly could?
That's fine.
Plus, they were warning him to stay away from Usagi. Now they want him to get to where Usagi is. Is it creepy wise guy?
No.
Because now he is. Before he was like, keep them apart because we want them separate and defeated. But now he wants them to, yes, you're bringing the rabbit right to me, you little dullards.
I can't answer you yet.
Whatever.
You get mad if I spoil anything.
That is absolutely true. Although I want, why does he have such a connection to Mamoru?
Creepy wise man?
Yeah.
I can't say anything. So I don't know that he does.
What if as he's in his robe and he's moving his hands over his crystal ball, you see cufflinks under his cloak.
Uh-huh.
You're like,
right.
Oh no.
Okay. Yes.
No,
Mamoru.
See, it ain't so.
Why?
Just within the recesses of his cloak, a bow tie.
Oh my god. This is very dark.
Backtracking is back for an all-new season. Hi, I'm Caliban.
And I'm Gooey Fame.
And we'd like to introduce you to Backtracking, the podcast that explores the real-world inspirations behind your favorite episodes of Star Trek.
From historical events to classical literature to blockbuster films, we go where no pod has gone before to seek out the origins of classic Trek tales.
Did you know, Gooey, that the TNG episode Too Short a Season was an allegory for the Iran-Contra affair?
Yeah, only sweatier. Did you know that the Enterprise episode Regeneration was an homage to the John Carpenter film The Thing?
Archer and T'Pol freezing to death over a bottle of whiskey would have been a controversial ending.
As a dog lover, Archer would not like The Thing, I'm guessing.
Oh my god, movie night is canceled. Join us every other Thursday for a journey back to the beginnings of the Trek universe.
Backtracking is available wherever you get your podcasts.
No, Porthos!
For Kuro Kuro Miru, or Curiously Looking Around, where we talk about elements of Japanese culture within the episode, today we are going to talk about future infrastructure planning and smart cities in Japan.
Give it to me like I'm five.
Basically, futuristic building plans and smart cities, which we will get to.
That's the same
later.
Amount of words. To remind me to never ask you to dumb anything down. It's a good thing I don't normally need things dumbed down. You're talking about the future.
The future.
Tubes.
Yes.
Traveling through tubes. Living in an arcology. On a robot island made of trash.
And
whatnot.
Yes. I mean, pie in the sky, maybe something.
I feel like that's, you know, I grew up in a time and place where people looked to Japan for the future, you know, or for the future idea.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes negatively, like, oh, they're buying everything, which turned out to like not be such a big deal. But that's like, you know, the when you set a movie in the future in the 1980s, there's going to be some neon and a guy eating a bowl of noodles.
Yes.
Because we're all going to be that lady on the billboard eating sushi, the geisha or whatever.
Right. Yeah, Coca-Cola. Exactly.
And that's what it is. And so like, you know, when I think about like Buckminster Fuller or like, you know, American, was he American? He might have been Canadian, North American designers who were like, oh, here's the city of the future. That was all like sci-fi. But you would see like in scaremongering 2020 reports about what Japanese is the economy is doing, you know, during the Buburu Geki.
Yes.
It would always be like, oh, and they've got this idea where they're going to build like a robot in the harbor and it's going to wave to everybody. And it's all these like, you know, watercolor sort of sketches of like cities of tomorrow. I feel like why don't we approach planning like that? We're lucky to get the garbage taken away in America.
Yeah.
And I know that Japan has fallen on times that are very similar, where also like, hey, take this garbage.
Yes.
But they keep having these plans for the future, you know?
Well, I think part of it is, and this is something that I've come across in my research that people have speculated about, is one, you know, they're islands. So
the economy of space.
The economy of space, sure.
Not
yes.
Outer space.
Yeah. Right. They need more more land.
Yeah.
So
they should build on the ocean.
Exactly. That's what I thought about a lot while I was researching this. And
there's no land on the ocean. Yeah, here, if you need another Barnes & Noble, bad business to pick.
That,
I don't know if they exist anymore.
They're still around.
If you need another macaroni grill, perfect.
fixed it.
You just build westward, right?
Yeah, right.
But there, they're like, this noodle shop's been here for 100 years.
Yeah.
New set of tiles.
Right. So there's that. And then another thing that came up a lot is they also, with the Ring of Fire and all of the, they've got a lot of natural disasters, you know, in Japan.
I saw a thing that said, of the earthquakes that happen, I can do this, of the earthquakes that happen on the Pacific Rim.
Yeah.
Which is not just a movie with giant robots.
No.
It's the Ring of Volcanoes, you know, or just like the Pacific shorelines or whatever.
Yes.
Like 3% of earthquakes happen. Was it earthquakes or volcanoes? I think it's earthquakes.
Uh-huh.
Happen on the Japanese islands landmass. And you go, 3% is not big. I'm talking the entire circumference of the Pacific Ocean.
Yeah.
Earthquakes that just give a whale a rumble in the deep sea that affect nobody, you know, other than higher tsunamis or something like that.
Right.
But not, you know. Yeah, on the little tiny islands of Japan.
Yes.
Like they get 3% of that seismic activity.
Yeah, exactly. And so because of that, they tend to be maybe a little bit more of climate change than a lot of other countries are, and like climate planning and like trying to plan for the future. Like this isn't working. This is an issue. So that plays into this. So in this episode, the Senshi travel to the future of Crystal Tokyo, and Japan can be very innovative when pushing the envelope of the future, as we talked about. So we're going to look at some of their plans for the future. But first, let's go. I'm going to give you, because I did too much research, I am going to give you two options of things we can look at in the past.
Okay.
So would you like to learn more about depth scrapers or
so far so good,
or the metabolism movement?
Whoa, wow, this is a tough one.
Yeah.
That's all I get.
Yeah. I can pretty much sum up depth scrapers in one sentence.
This is, if you can't sell it through the pitch, then you don't deserve to sell it. Let's metabolism movement sounds great, but let's go with depth scrapers.
Okay. So, in the 1930s in Japan, depth scrapers were, proposed underground skyscrapers.
Jackpot.
Yep. The idea behind building these underground structures was to future-proof Tokyo against devastating earthquakes. Yep.
What's worse than being on top of a long pole when the earth starts shaking? Is it being trapped inside the earth when it starts shaking?
That's what was my thought.
But I take back everything I said about 2020.
Yeah. But
the 2020, the news program. Yes. I'm just realizing our young listeners have no idea what I'm talking about.
No,
like, what, last year?
Yeah,
that
right.
It was bad, but.
Right, exactly. So there was a devastating earthquake in 1923. So there was a lot of kind of ideas around this time of like, how can we future-proof against earthquake experiences,
sure,
and make them better?
And they've perfected that. They have technology that they export with buildings and literal, like, you know, pads, you know,
yes,
on absorbent material that absorbs the
making
shakiness.
Buildings that don't get destroyed as easily with earthquakes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Only the top floor of the 35-story buildings were designed to be above ground. The buildings were intended to have huge mirrors on top of them that would direct sunlight down the central core of the structure. The mirrors would rotate around the building, following the sun as it moved. And prismic glass was meant to give even lighting throughout the course of the day, and fresh conditioned air was to be pumped from above ground.
I've got two comments on this, as is my job as the sci-fi troubadour. That's a shirt, too.
Yeah.
you need a funny drawing, though. You've got the Tokyo 3 in Neon Genesis Evangelion, where the buildings of Tokyo by day, or also, you know, when the things are safe, are up. And then when it's night or there's some kind of angel attack, they withdraw
and they go into
this space under the earth called the Geofront. And then you've got like this upside down city going on.
That's true.
Which for you, if you're in, you know, your office in the 35th floor, it's like, oh, it's either a view of a lake or a view of another lake that's underground. It's just dark.
Right.
So
right.
I guess it wouldn't be that bad. Just don't take the escalator all the way down.
Right.
You fall out. And then also Resident Evil, the Paul W.S. Anderson movie.
Oh, my God.
Featured a secret lab under Raccoon City that was essentially its own city. And so we spend a little time at the beginning showing the normal lives of the scientists there. And they take an elevator down to work. And then they have like a fake cityscape and like daylight outside the windows that like changes, you know, behind like the slabs.
Sure.
But it's like all fake. There's nothing really there because they're just underground.
Right. I'm reminded also of the Super Mario Brothers movie. Aren't you so glad I brought that up? That gem of a film.
How? What?
Because their city's underground. And they're it's underground.
No, it's not. It takes place on an alternate Earth that you reach
through
a portal that is underground.
Oh, the portal's underground.
Yes.
But I thought they were...
Sci-fi troubadour.
Okay, all right. Anyways, so a 1931 edition of Everyday Science and Mechanics stated that, quote, the whole structure in case of an earthquake will vibrate together, resisting any crushing strain, end quote. And the periodical also said that the design was put together by the product of, quote, the best engineering brains of Japan.
Okay.
So, and there's a very, you can find a very detailed drawing of it online. This was meant to be a real thing, but never came to fruition.
Well,
yeah.
I probably saw it on the news.
Yeah.
2020.
So, and I guess I'll just let people know really quick with just in a sentence what the metabolism movement is. It's an architectural movement, and the idea behind it is like making buildings that can have changeable parts and that can grow and build with your needs.
Like it's modular?
Yeah, it's like modular. Is basically a way to simplify it. And there are some actual buildings of that. It's really cool.
I bet like a lot of urban projects that went nowhere, it's now kind of an eyesore and real.
Yeah.
Its future is in complicated doubt.
That is a lot of what's
like many
going
of the
on.
Stilt building apartments around our town that are like, well, we got parking. Yeah, you have like six parking spots under there.
That's true.
And a building that, you know, we don't have earthquakes, but it's just fairly ridiculous.
Right.
And can never be altered or anything. Okay, so.
Yes.
Sci-fi troubadour.
Yes.
This is a deep cut, but I read a sci-fi novel once that was set in, well, pretty much set right now, but okay. I read it in like the 80s or 90s, but it was set in a future where, check this out, it's weird, corporations had all the control in the government and people,
what?
And they basically bought people's votes and traded them for like basic welfare and services. Crazy, right?
That is so crazy.
And so the people, they actually did this in, I think Ernst Klein read the same book as me, because this basically happens in Ready Player One. Like you've got a bunch of people who are provided for by the government, probably in exchange for their, you know, political power or votes, and they live in racks.
Like just like,
you know, like coffin hotels.
Oh,
just but like bigger, like the size of a small Airstream trailer or something like that. So anyway, that was Ready Player One. In this book, they had this a similar thing. And so you could just leave her in. You could crane in new units and they would hook up and the plumbing hooks up to the other plumbing. I'm just describing this thing in the real world. That's why I'm talking about this.
Yeah.
And so the plumbing and the services and all that. And they, instead of condominiums, they were called contiminimums. And I bet that author, Michael Stackpole, was like, well, I'll be touching myself tonight.
Yeah. Oh, my God. No, the building that you reminded me of the most is still exists in Tokyo. It's called the Nakagen Capsule Tower. And it is these... capsules that were there. I mean, they're these structures that are very similar to what you're describing. They're probably a little bit more secure than in Ready Player One. But
so these white guys are just like, you know, reading popular science or something, just seeing what's going on in Japan, then go, oh, right. I can make that. Oh, it's so sci-fi. Put this in my sci-fi
book. It was, I don't know when Ready Player One was initially written, but this building was built in 1972. Okay. So,
and it seemed like a great idea.
It did. Until, like, the idea behind it is, like, if you needed to do any updates or, you know, renovations, you just you know, take that one out. And the problem is it affects everybody around you.
Sure.
And you have to get your okay with all of your neighbors. Hey, is it okay if I, like, you know, turn your life upside down for a little while?
You're going to have a new view because we're moving your capsule to another side of the building.
Right. So, in theory, awesome, but just, like, actually thinking about it and, like, in actuality, wasn't as great as they initially thought. So.
This is one of those instances where efficiency outpaced livability.
Yeah, and I think that's one thing that the metabolism movement has been criticized for, was that it wasn't really thought of for, like, from a human perspective.
Yeah, right.
Like, actually working and living in these buildings, you know? So, yeah, you gotta keep in mind who your real audience is here, you know? Who's going to be working and living in these places day after day?
Home is wherever you are on the rack.
Yeah, right. So moving forward to the 2000 teens, I guess you could say, the Shimizu Try 2004 Mega City Pyramid is a proposed... is a proposed Shimizu Corporation project for the construction of a massive arcology, which is the fusion of architecture and ecology, pyramid over Tokyo Bay. And there have been a lot of proposals over the years for different structures over Tokyo Bay. It seems like a prime piece of real estate that we're just not building on because it's water.
Right.
So the structure would house 1 million people. The construction would be 2,004 meters or 6,575 feet high. Including five stacked trusses. Did I say that right?
I hope so.
so it's yeah, okay.
Plural for truss.
Yes, plural for truss.
Yes.
Each with similar dimensions to that of the Great Pyramid of Giza. This pyramid would help answer Tokyo's increasing lack of space, although the project would only handle small fraction of their population. The proposed structure is so large that it cannot be built with current conventional materials due to their weight. The design relies on the future availability of super strong lightweight materials based on carbon nanotubes presently being researched.
Sure.
This is...
I got this great idea.
Yeah.
Now let's wait 20 years for them to develop a material that this could actually be built out of.
Right.
In that case, I've patented the time machine.
Right, exactly.
Just wait. I'm taking orders now.
How long do I... Yeah, right. I'm taking orders now. Exactly.
I couldn't think of it. That's how Tesla works.
The plan was to start construction in 2030, but no further action has been taken. Shimizu is still determined to complete the project by 2110, making history as the largest man-made structure in Earth's history. I mean, at that point, I don't know if it still will be.
I thought the point was to make efficient use of space and to modernize, not to level untold city blocks in order to make the largest structure that's ever been built artificially by man.
Yeah, I don't think it's the point to make it the largest.
That sounds like an arcology.
It is. Yeah. It is an arcology.
And an arcology is, you know, the idea is it's a megastructure, a building that is essentially a city within a building. You see this all the time in anime and manga, where you would just live there. And maybe you can't leave, but you would have no need to leave.
Yeah.
And, you know, people have argued that they exist already. You know, when I lived in downtown St. Paul, I lived in an apartment building that mm-hmm. was connected to other buildings in the downtown by what we call skyways, which That's are aerial true. Walkways. And you could walk down to Sbarro's and get something to eat. I'd go to the gym in the morning. Hell, I would run laps in the skyways, you know, and I never had to leave. I never had to set foot outside. And you didn't want to because it was 20 below.
Right, right.
So that an arcology? I don't know.
I mean, I think you could argue for that, maybe. I mean, if you don't have to leave, but not everybody who lives in those areas, you know, some people might work somewhere else. So I don't know. Is that, yeah. I don't know how you define it exactly.
That's true.
Shimizu has several other dream mega project concepts in the works. So if you like reading about this sort of thing, they're definitely somebody to check out. Some of their other projects include the Luna Ring. No, not our Luna, which is the concept of putting a ring of solar generators around the moon's equator that could send the generated electric energy back to Earth via microwaves from the near side of the moon. Another dream project is known as Ocean Spiral and is essentially an underwater city.
Tell me more.
Yeah. So there is a comprehensive artist rendering of the structure on Shimizu's site, which depicts the construction divided into three parts, a floating spherical area with a diameter of 500 meters located just below the sea, will house business and residential sections and hotels. It kind of looks like a giant greenhouse or like biodome. Like it looks like, you know, probably super reinforced glass, and like it's a big dome structure with metal and that sort of thing.
Sure.
And so that's at the top. And then this structure will connect to a 15 kilometer, about 9.3 mile long spiral pathway. So it's this huge long spiral that goes down to the ocean floor, 3 to 4 kilometers below the surface. In the structure at the bottom of the ocean will be a scientific research area where scientists will explore ways to unearth energy resources from the ocean floor. So the idea, it's supposed to be kind of like a self-sustaining city, and that like they'll get energy, they'll harvest energy from the ocean floor that they can help use to power the whole city. And then like they could eat like seafood and stuff like that and grow like
well, you'd have to.
Yeah, I know, right?
Hamburgers are seafood underwater.
Yeah.
All food is seafood.
But also help, I think, with the idea of like finding other ways we could use like energy from the sea to power things back on land as well.
Well, you got a lot of sea, guys.
Yeah.
So
I know.
I say keep working on it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's not a bad plan, but somebody felt the need in an article to say this is not a pipe dream. This is we really want to do this. So they dream big. Anyways, another form.
I mean, you'd need pipes, but
yes. Another form of future planning that is becoming popular is a smart city. Have you ever heard of this, Cal? Do you have any idea what this is?
I have a friend who is a doctor of social sciences and an educator, and he has written, he's writing a book, but he's writes several articles about the idea of smart cities and cities' relations to the technology or integrated technology of the future, but, you know, right now.
Right, right. So it's an urban area that uses different types of electronic methods and sensors to collect data, and the data that you collect is
big.
Yeah, it's used to manage assets, resources, services, and services
or
efficiently.
Restrict them.
Yeah, I know.
just as often, restrict them.
Yeah, I know. So
that's a lot of what he writes about.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So, I mean, the idea is it's supposed to improve the operations across the city. I mean, I guess that's the ideal way of looking at it.
Sure.
Panasonic was one of the first corporations in Japan that successfully constructed a smart city. The Fujisawa Sustainable Smart City, or Smart Town, excuse me, or FSST, opened in 2014 with 100 families initially moving in. It has since grown to a community of 2,000 people. It is still being constructed with the completion planned to occur next year. Panasonic's goal was to create a sustainable community. When designing the city, they focused on five areas: community, energy, wellness, security, and mobility. FSST aims to lower water usage by 30%, CO2 emissions by 70%, and to make renewable energy have it be 30% of the total energy utilized in the community. So, you know, I think they could be attainable goals for sure. Of course, I think you're kind of touching upon this maybe a little bit, but one of the largest concerns for smart cities in Japan and all over is the likelihood that, well, maybe we didn't talk about this exactly, but the likelihood that personal data could be breached and utilized nefariously. Not to mention that you have to be okay with data about how you live your life being sent to the city constantly.
Well, it's happening right now.
Yeah, I suppose.
Have submitted or authorized.
I turn a light on, the city knows, or the electric company knows.
Well, not that specifically.
Okay.
Maybe on a smart grid, but they know how many kilowatt hours you're burning.
Right.
Because your grow lights. I know all about you. But I mean, like, yeah, like the sort of things that you opt into on your terms of service that you don't read when you turn on your phone.
Right.
You know, they know how many cars are moving past certain points, and they know, you know, the traffic cams tell them how far cars are backed up at certain choke points. And, you know, you get on the bus, they know how many people are riding on the bus and yes. Who's using that. And so, yeah, I mean, like things like that, they have that data for you.
Yeah.
But I don't know what you're eating.
Well, that's true.
Thank God.
Yeah, thank God. I don't get your nose out of my business.
No, please help me. This is the fifth can of ravioli I've had today. It reminds me of Delta City. Delta City on the old Detroit.
Oh, yes.
In RoboCop.
Yes.
Where OCP, a corporation, wants to create essentially a smart city. And, you know, Ed Neumeier was a smart guy, but he didn't know. He didn't have the ideas and the data to formulate the ideas that he was having that became real ideas essentially. Right. But the idea of a corporation basically just buying from the government a city that, you know, he got that part right. Not a lot going on in Detroit still.
Yeah.
But in the future of RoboCop, Detroit is like empty. Like nobody lives there. It's just crime. And so the state or whoever, you know, the municipality, I don't know what the governing body is, sells it to this company who says, we're going to clean it all out. And it's going to be a brand new smart city of tomorrow and build amazing condos and commercial districts and parks and all these things. We just got to get all the crime out of there. And that's why we built this giant tank that growls at people.
Yeah. Yeah. You got to love that.
Well. We're living in
that. Yeah, right? I suppose
like,
we are.
They remade RoboCop a couple years ago, and it's like, what was it set now? Like,
yeah, right.
What are you? What? What's the satire?
Right.
There's no satire.
The
whole satire of RoboCop was that he's like, you know, an armor-plated Bernie Goetz that's just going to like take care of all this stuff, right?
Yes.
And, you know, that worked in the 80s, but we have grown into that world. We live in that world now.
The problem is there isn't just one RoboCop.
Yeah. There's also, you know, the cops that are heroes are fantasy. So there you go.
Oh, there you go.
It must be a movie.
Yeah, it must be.
You know, you're rooting for the cops in that movie?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
No, don't go on strike. Please, cops. But like, thank God Clarence Boddicker isn't a real person.
Yeah, thank God.
Otherwise, I would want a RoboCop out there throwing him through plate glass windows. just from the 70s to the 80s, that guy changed a lot, didn't he?
Yeah, he sure did.
His wife finally divorced him because he's abusing their kid, calling him a dumbass all the time.
Yeah, I know.
He turns to crime. And he loves baseball.
Yep.
Tigers are playing tonight. Never miss a game.
even though Japan has a reputation for being progressively, technologically progressive.
I saw that in 2020.
Finally got that out, yes. Yeah. Its public sector and a large part of its private sector has lagged in transitioning to the digital era.
Do you think that that is a result of the popping of the bubble? Or do you think, and we always, remember, we're talking culturally, we always get real close to, like, you know, racism, basically, or trying to call, you know, one kind of person or culture a certain thing. But do you think that it is traditionalism that slowed them down?
Because
obviously the economy hit was huge.
Yeah.
But are they reaching some, because there's a certain way that they live, and I feel like they have all these ideas about different ways they could live, mm-hmm. but, you know, you just talked about a bunch of projects that just never really came to fruition for one reason or another. It's like, mm-hmm. why don't they make the jump? Why aren't they living in tubes? If that's so great.
Well, you have to get the funding, and I think maybe sometimes the idea people don't have the money.
Yeah, but they go, we're going to build another garbage island, and then they just do it because their government is structured economically a little different than ours, and mm-hmm. they can just go, well, we're just going to do this.
I mean, I think you can argue that maybe not everybody thought that depth scrapers were a good idea.
I think, yeah. That's a good call, probably, on that one.
Yeah, I kind of think so.
Yeah, don't let Elon Musk know about that.
No.
He would love that.
Yeah, he probably would. I think Japan is this really interesting amalgamation of traditionalism and having this rich tradition and culture and then like technologically advanced. And I think maybe in some ways it comes from that in a way. Like, I think
they have a history of punctuated evolution.
Uh-huh. What do you mean by that?
I mean that they spend a lot of time doing one thing, either for cultural reasons or for reasons of isolation and resources, and then they have access to new things and they change almost overnight. And we've talked about that a lot on this show.
That happens a lot.
They spend a lot of time just living in grass huts, and then the Chinese and the Koreans show up and they go, okay, cool, thanks for that stuff, bring more next time you come. Yeah. And then they start working on that and they do that for a while, and then Admiral Perry shows up and he's like, oh, I'm skipping a lot of steps here.
That's
and they're
okay.
like, you're going to trade with us? And they're like, okay. And then you've got like Me Woman magazine or whatever it was. Suddenly they're like, all these flappers are running around Tokyo. I'm mad.
Right.
You know, or they're like, cars, huh? Cars, you say.
Yeah, right.
And they're making cars and they're doing that. And so I just think that, like, I feel like we're due for another leap, right?
If they're
if they're going to do it, I say do it. But instead they want to have the Olympics.
Don't get me started on that. We've talked about that. It was an investment.
But I do think them wanting to have the Olympics is a part of this. I think they wanted to bring money in to Tokyo.
For sure.
They wanted to show off Tokyo.
Yes,
they wanted
absolutely.
To say that, you know, that they have the ambition still. But spending, you know, X amount of multiple billions of dollars on the Olympics is a half measure. They could have spent that on their pyramid or on their underwater energy,
the ocean spiral
recovering technology or whatever. You know, it's like don't pretend like you're doing it. Do it.
Yeah,
that's what I say.
Yeah,
it's not my money.
No, right. I mean, a lot of business and government, like official documents.
The government's been screwed up for a little while too.
Well, yeah, but everything is signed on paper, and the way that they sign it is with a personal ink stamp called a honko, and I don't think we've talked about that specifically. You're laughing.
That was like Bozo's sidekick, right?
I don't know.
Honko?
I don't know.
All right.
It's, you know, everyone's is individual and it's like this big deal.
What's that have to do with future buildings?
They've decided that the way that they're doing things isn't working largely because of COVID-19. That's brought that to light. So in 2020, they realized because of a lot of the way they did things that it's not working and it's really important to move to be more digital.
It's one day you're rolling your stamp signature onto a piece of paper and you're like, we're doing it all wrong. We're well, doing it all wrong.
They couldn't get things done.
It isn't
done.
That we had like a cuckoo right-wing nationalist prime minister that was driving us in the wrong direction for all of the teens. It wasn't that.
I'm not saying it's any one thing. I'm talking about something
specific. It isn't that we're trying to pick a fight with North Korea for some reason. It's not that.
I never said they were perfect. But in 2020, the Japanese government announced the establishment of a new digital agency to assist with the country's digital conversion. New digital initiatives are being put together around a concept known as Society 5.0. The goal of which is to combine the possibilities of digital technology with human needs and be a human-centered society.
That sounds like PR copy.
What does that mean? Does. So basically the way they've defined it is they're and this was first proposed in Japan, Society 5.0. The name comes from defining the types of society that they believe they've lived and that preceded it, starting with the hunting society, which is Society 1.0.
Okay, so this gets into Future Shock, which is what the episode is named after, Future Shocked.
Right.
But the 1970 book by Alvin Toffler, who laid all these things out, you know. Later, he would later write a sequel to it called Third Wave, which was about the hunter-gatherer society, then the pre-industrialist society, then the new future digital society. Not to cut you off, but just to combine our researches here.
Right.
And he wrote this. It's actually based on an article that he wrote in 65, and then he published the book in 70. And I should mention, nobody ever mentions this, nobody ever says this, but he also, he published it or wrote it along with his spouse, Adelaide Farrell. She's always left out.
Oh,
but they wrote these together. No, it's not cute. It's that she needs to have the,
I'm not saying, oh, it's cute. I'm saying thank you for, the noise
if
was
it's
thank you
really
for mentioning
the future,
her.
Then we should mention that women have an equal thing in it. But and the funny thing is it's hopelessly out of date now. But he was on to something in that he saw, he didn't know what computer is or the internet. He lived to that. He lived to like 2015 or 16. So he saw a lot of this come true. But he presaged the idea of us moving from the, you know, conventional, just living the industrial society only with faster cars, you know, to the shift of the increase in globalism and the erasing of like borders and lines and stuff like that. And the sort of, you know, new world that we live in and enjoy now.
Yeah.
But he didn't, but you read it now and it's just like, it's, you know, he's just hopelessly off about a lot of stuff.
Well, that's
but
okay.
Then he was not, you know, he wrote this at the time of, you know, Don Draper's Swillin' Whiskey, and he's like, oh, it's the all new razors we got to sell.
Right.
Three blades. It's crazy. How can they go any higher than that? You know, you just can't see. It's like the guy that said around the turn of the century, it's like, oh, I think we've invented just about everything. This was pre-radio. Like,
yeah,
you know what
right.
I mean? They hadn't been to the radio yet.
Can you imagine a world without radio?
No, I think we figured it all out. Oh, my horse isn't ready yet? All right, I'll keep talking.
Yes. Now we are up to Itadakimasu with Usagi. What did Usagi eat in this episode? No food in this episode. No time.
No time for food.
No. We are meeting Pluto in real life and going to the future. We don't have time for food.
Unless you count moon pie. Moon pie.
Yes.
What a time to be alive. Or maybe there's some ducks in the park or something. I don't know.
Food. Yeah. Villain gauge, we rate a baddie 1 to 5 dark stars, 5 being the most wicked. The droid in this episode is named Ryukusu, and that is how it is spelled and pronounced in Japanese. And I found some variations on the spelling of her name.
Yeah.
Quite a few, actually. I've seen it spelled R-H-U-A-X. I've seen it spelled R-Y-U-A-X, and I've seen it spelled L-U-A-X.
Yeah, well, that's the L-R connection. But yeah, but like Ruox is like a different name. That's a name in like, I don't know if it's Greek or Latin or whatever, but that's just another name. So I don't, are they saying that it translates? That's if somebody wanted to say Ruox in Japanese, they'd be like, Liliox or whatever
right.
it is. Like it would become kind of a tortured thing.
Yeah, I don't No, like, I guess I came across, like, I think it's ruaks. It means, I think it means lava in Greek, which doesn't like it has anything to do.
See, that's interesting because I saw that it was like the name of a demon.
Oh.
But not in like, you know, in like Warhammer or something like that. So it's just like, you know, some Warhammer writer was flipping through a book of Latin or something like that. It's like, oh, Ruax, that sounds good.
Right.
He's got 50 hit points.
Right.
So it clearly has some kind of history.
Yeah.
But it's not anything that's easily Googleable.
No.
Take that, big data.
According to the anime magazine Animage, the writer of this episode, Katsuyuki Sumisawa, came up with this name from a Latin term. However, he didn't specify what Latin term.
You took him off.
I know.
Can I use this in Scrabble? I guess that's the real.
Yeah, right. I don't know.
Because it'd be a great one to use.
But it seems to be the closest to the Japanese pronunciation that we talked about. Yeah. Seems to be the closest to the word lux.
Which would be light in Latin.
And it could be like so light or like luxury or, you know, well, something that's like what that.
Yeah.
Okay. But
it's light.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Sorry.
Fiat Lux.
Yeah. But I mean, her design kind of looks like a luxurious flapper. I mean, is that what they're doing?
I'm glad you asked. Her design, and I'm not taking any questions after this, is based on, I believe, a dancing girl from the silent era.
Mm.
And I'll give you some specific examples.
Okay.
If you look at the Machinen Mensch from Metropolis, from Fritz Lang's Metropolis.
Yes.
When Evil Maria does the sexy dance to get all the workers riled up, she looks like that. She has that feathered headdress type thing.
Okay.
She has a very immodest sort of top part, and they've kind of like, you know, made that cartoony.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also got the very low drop waist skirt type thing.
Okay.
With the thing in front. And, you know, if she went like, I'm doing a belly dancer.
Yes.
Nobody can hear this, but, you know, that. Or if you Google Theda Bera, who is a silent film actress who often played dancing girls, Jezebels, you know, she's one of the original vamps.
Interesting.
She looks a lot like this, too.
Okay, because I was trying to figure that out. It's really interesting that you mentioned Metropolis specifically, because for some reason I was thinking flapper, but I was also thinking Art Deco.
Yeah.
And that seems to fit with Metropolis. So, yeah. And
except Metropolis is in the future.
Right.
And it's
that's when it was
horrible.
Made.
Smart city where the workers it all is. Work in the tubes in the bottom and the rich people enjoy delights at the top.
We brought it back to a smart city.
We always do.
Yeah.
Wow, this podcast is leaning to the left. Hey, put a shim under the table there.
So her design, she is light blue, wavy bobbed hair, unless she's about to attack you with it, of course. Dark blue eyes, bright purple lips, and she's got a white bodice that has dark purple accents, including an S-shaped design on the front that... So something that somebody else said clued me onto this. It looks like hands of a clock that are curved. Like, if you look at it, it looks like it's in an S shape, but the ends of it have, like, arrows on them. So that's what I think that is.
Huh. Think that it, yeah, I guess that's probably what it is. It also, it looks similar to possibly a, the sound holes in a violin.
Interesting.
There's a character, not from the TV show, from the comic book, The Umbrella Academy, who is mm-hmm. like the living violin or whatever.
Right.
I can't remember what her thing is. And she has, you know, a white bodysuit, but like cutouts, like a stringed instrument has. Yeah.
And it is reminiscent of that as well. I see that.
It's also kind of similar to a treble clef.
Interesting. Yeah. Yeah. I can see that as well. Yeah. But, you know, I figure with time, it's probably the clock thing. But I could see all those other things.
Well, why doesn't she have a big one around her neck like Flava Flav?
Yeah. And then she has a light pink skirt with dark purple accents that is secured to her bodice with a gold facet, dark purple armbands and a choker, as well as gold wrists and ankle cuffs. And then a white hat with a gold flower design with an aqua jewel affixed to it and a long, thin red feather.
Yeah.
And a lot of amazing lines are said by her, and you already said a lot of them. But she's very sassy, and I like that. I like that a lot. I think she's a talker. She's a big talker.
Cannot, she's got the best lines.
She has the best lines.
She does not know what show she's in.
No.
Okay. All right. So I guess we have to do the rating. But I have a question, first of all.
Yeah.
Is she the last right?
Yes.
Oh, so bittersweet.
Yeah, I know.
I have not really comprehensively enjoyed the droids, but to go out so strong, why save this one for the end? Well, I mean, it's clear.
That's why.
The reason's clear.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's why. I also got the feeling that maybe Esmeralda was saving the big guns for last. Well,
that or she's just... has she time abilities.
Yeah, that's probably
We're in the time corridor, so I choose you.
Yeah, Ria right.
Kisu.
Yeah, right. Nice one. I like what you did there. We're at our rating. Just her monologues compared to some of the other droids who could only say their names was just like, it was great. Felt like we got to spend a lot of time with her, maybe because she talked so much. But she has a lot of other abilities that she seemed to use pretty well also, which I also really liked. The shape-shifting to look like Chibiusa's mom is killer. That is, yeah. And then her hair about to attack you. And then the reverse flow of time. So I'm going to give her 5 out of 5 dark stars.
The last time we got near the end of one of these things, if you don't count Aelin Ann.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't.
Yeah. Sorry, Aelin Ann.
We had them transforming into loved ones to try to trick you.
Good point.
With the DD girls.
Good point. Yeah. So they're doing that again. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah. So I don't know if it's just like, you know, the final boss will always transform into someone that you love and try to trick you. But I do like the fact that, unlike that technique, which was very effective on the Sailor Scouts earlier on, Chibius is like, yeah, no. What? What? No.
I know.
That's an idiot. I'm going to the future because, you know, my mom is... You know, obviously that's not her. She's right. Locked up. That's why I'm doing all this.
Right.
So that didn't work out. But otherwise, I like the ability to do that. Like the time powers. She's got the best lines. She's got nice claws, nice outfit.
Yep.
Blue hair. You got to have blue hair.
Yeah.
I got to go 5. 5 awesome. Dark stars.
Yes.
Way to bring the droid line to a close.
I know.
It's only real blood will be spilled from now on.
That's true. And it won't be just sand. So now we are up to our rating. I love that Mamochan gives Chibiusa a pep talk and encourages her to be brave and face her fears. I also love we finally get to meet Sailor Pluto in the flesh in this episode. Just a super powerful Yoma droid as well, disguising herself as Chibiusa's mom, just was extra little bit of evil. And plus we get time travel, which was cool. But I think the thing that I like the most is that Chibiusa's character development, where she thinks about kind of just giving up and letting go and being attacked, and then she decides to fight back. So I know there's a lot of expo dump, and you made me realize this episode is not perfect, but I'm going to give it 4 out of 5 roses.
Okay. I don't remember what I said before we watched this episode, because this show seems to answer the questions that I ask and seems to anticipate what I need from the show. But I apparently told the show that I wanted a crappy filler episode, and the show listened.
Wow.
This is, I can't think of a less exciting way to go to the future. And I feel like the dream episode where they went inside her brain and we were getting what we thought was a glimpse of the future.
Yes.
Was more interesting and exciting.
Okay.
This whole episode, as I said before, falls victim to having concealed too much. Like, you get into a situation where maybe we'll talk about, wait till he arrives. And then, like, two male characters come in and you're like, is he or is he? Or
yeah,
is he
right.
he, I'm going crazy.
Yeah.
And that's what you've got now, because you are basically revealing stuff. I mean, we already knew about the existence of Sailor Pluto, but now we know that, you know, she has a father named Kronos, I guess, and she controls time and has the staff or whatever, and she's this guardian, but completely worthless information because, bye, we're just moving on.
I know.
And now in the future, we're like, oh, did you know that creepy wise guy is actually some guy we don't know that just showed up and just started telling everybody what to do?
I didn't say that.
I'm like, I didn't know that.
I didn't say that.
It seemed like Prince Demand. No, they did in the show.
No,
Saphir says that in the show.
Oh, well, yeah, you're right.
Yes.
Right,
so,
sorry.
So I'm like, okay, I thought that Prince Demando was in charge of everything, but now they're being manipulated, which does go back to me saying, aren't we going to see a lot of these characters redeemed instead of totally killed? I think we're probably at 50-50.
Yes.
I bet 50% of them will be redeemed, 50% of them will be killed, not counting the Aikashi sisters. They're already out of this thing. So, like, that's fine. I like depth, but you're just... You had so many throne room scenes with a guy just staring at a glass of wine, and they're like, I like this guy. And they're like, I have pens on my jacket. And then, like, they just nothing, you know? And they just stand in front of the evil black crystal.
Yeah.
And you had so much time to set all this up. And now you're just dropping it while other things are happening. You're trying to be coy, but you're also revealing things. You're being so coy that I don't know if you're actually... You are actually dropping things at this point, you know?
Right.
If there's explicit information I'm getting. And the only way that you... And you know it too, hypothetical straw man who wrote this episode, because you have characters explicitly say, wow, isn't it weird that this guy does this? You know, I've never really liked that this is happening. And people don't talk like that, and you normally don't talk like that in the show. So it's
yeah.
very... frustrating, especially when, after all that explicit talking, I don't really know what's going on. I also don't like the fact that our characters are put in a situation where they, you know, lack agency. I mean, we do have the one thing where, yes, Chibiusa gets her moment.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like she's had this moment a couple times now.
She has.
But this is maybe the final best moment as they transition to the future. But Sailor Moon and the others just get thrown into the crevices. And then they just wander around and just don't do anything. And they show up and they can't do anything. And Tuxedo Mask is just there to do what he does, which is just save somebody at the last second. And it's just, there's no agency. Plus, did you know the animation seemed kind of cheap?
You think so?
Yeah. I feel like a lot of the time sequences and a lot of the, what they call in-betweens, you know, there's an artist that goes through and does like the poses, like the beats of the scene. Our characters are doing this. And then... this and then this, and then there are artists that draw the in-between parts from this pose to that pose or from this section to that section. A lot of that just seemed like a lot sparse on lines, and it just seemed kind of sketchy and not in an intentional way.
Like it wasn't done smoothly.
It was done cheaply.
Yeah.
It was done quickly, which is a thing that cartoons run into. But like now, why couldn't the episode where they're all fighting over ice cream or whatever be the one that they cheap out on?
Right.
Actually, there were some parts in that one that didn't look good either. So I don't know what's going on. I know that they will probably try to do their best to end it. Maybe they're saving resources for future episodes because they need to end this strong. I hope it ends strong. But there's a wind in time and somebody broke it. One rose.
Whoa. Wow.
It broke wind.
I got it.
I ended that with a fart joke.
Yeah, you did, because that's how you feel about it. I get it.
Just to undercut my superciliousness.
I was... Okay, wow. All right. My English title is Chibiusa's Quest, Return to the Future.
That's a good description. Mine is pretty simple. My deep title, it's Whack to the Future.
Okay, all right. Next episode, we are talking about episode number 83, Shogeki no Mirai, Demando no Kuroki Yabo in Japanese, The Shocking Future, Demando's Dark Ambition, the English translation, and the English title, Legend of the Negamoon.
Oh, God, Oscar. Ah, quit! I quit!
Yep.
Okay, all right, all right. Okay, okay. Questions are going to be answered.
Uh-huh.
Will we want those answers? I feel like this show has teased me to the point where I resent it. You know
okay,
what I mean?
I understand. I'm not
counting episodes. I don't know how far we are as compared to where we were in the Dark Kingdom at this point. But by the time the Dark Kingdom answers came, and they parsed out those reveals. We had episodes where everything stopped, and then yes. Obi-Wan, Princess Serenity showed up and was like, oh, something else. Here's another thing. And it was like, all right, it's a little clumsy, but we're getting the information. They have waited so long to tell us anything about anything with this.
That's
and then
true.
It's like, here's the whole thing. But we finally get to it.
Yes. Yeah.
Better be worth it. Better be worth it. You know what's worth it?
What is worth it?
Having our listeners appreciate what we do.
I agree.
Me complain about how the show's not moving fast enough, or it's moving too fast. But one of our listeners, Hazel Twilight, left us a very nice review, a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. She said, fantastic show. Cal's summaries are hilarious, and I love the research that Mika does. Definitely worth listening to if you are into Sailor Moon.
Thank you, Hazel Twilight.
And then, I mean, that pretty much says it all, right?
Yeah, it does. And listeners, if you haven't written a review yet, please write us a review. We really appreciate it. It means a lot to us. It helps bring more listeners to the show, and we can continue doing the show for you and for more listeners, and it helps spread the love of Sailor Moon and Sailor Noob.
Yeah, I don't know how it works. You know, if there was one podcast host in the world that just said, here's how it works. When you hit X amount of reviews or likes or upvotes or downloads, then you move to this tier, don't you think that that would be something positive for the industry?
Yeah.
But every single thing, and it's Apple, but you know, but every single thing is a black box. You have no idea how you're doing unless you pay somebody to use an algorithm to find the right thing and data mine the answers or whatever,
right.
Which we've done a little bit. But I don't know how it works. All I know is that people tune in, they see a good review, they go, wow, people like this. Looks like they go in depth, you know, it's funny. This is something I want to listen to.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, if you feel, don't lie if you don't feel that way, but if you right. feel that way, we would love to have a nice review from you and also just to hear from the fans.
Yes.
Many of whom also talk with us on our Discord,
mm-hmm.
which we encourage you to join. And we've got a link in our show notes to that. And also, always follow us on social media if you're not yet. Noob_Sailor on Twitter and Sailor Noob on Facebook.
Yes. And Noob_ on Instagram as well.
That's right.
Yep.
Where we got all the good stuff.
That's right.
The fashion. And when I get a sticker, we post them there.
Oh, no sticker today. What happened?
I feel like the days of stickers are, the day of the wine and stickers are over.
Oh my God. Well, maybe there'll be some stickers next week.
Be.
Well, that's our show for this week. And the Name of the Moon will be punishing you next week with another episode of Sailor Noob.
It better be.